Accession number 20302, Reel 1.
Donald Newson, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in a Great Yarmouth, roll number 4, house number 143.
What was the name of the road?
It wasn't a road, it was one of the Yarmouth rolls.
What are they?
They're very, very old in places where people are very poor usually lived, and they were destroyed during the war by enemy bombing. They were due to be pulled down anyway, and a very old part of Yarmouth.
So what were the housing conditions there when you were a boy?
Very, very sparse, very bad. There would be probably one large room downstairs and stairs and one room above. And they were shared toilets and shared outside taps.
Would you have electricity?
No. You would have gas.
Gas lighting?
Gas lighting, yeah. But not cooking.
And which year were you born?
I was born in 1925.
Did you go to school in Yarmouth?
Yes, I went to a school called the Hospital School, which is an elementary school in the centre of Yarmouth, near the marketplace.
Whereabouts were these rows, by the way?
The rows, they went from east to west, from the sea and to the River Yare. And they were very narrow and very congested.
And which road has replaced them now? Or which street?
Which?
Street has replaced them now.
They would be called now Middlegate Street.
How old were you when you left school?
13 3/4.
So that was just before the war started?
Yeah, just before 1939.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I went straight into a job. I was an errand boy.
Did you hear Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did.
Under what circumstances?
I was with my brother, and I think that was on a Sunday morning. We were going for a swim in the Yarmouth bathing pool, and the news came through that war had been declared, as Neville Chamberlain hadn't had a reply from Hitler.
How did you feel about it?
Apprehensive. But it wasn't totally unexpected. As well as being an errand boy, I was a newspaper boy as well. And when I was delivering the newspapers, I used to read the news before I put them through the box. And I got the impression that the country didn't want to go to war. But although Mr. Chamberlain was supposed to be an appeaser, it was my opinion he was playing for time. And he gave us that time because when war broke out, they had all the gas masks already made, which they issued us with. And as I say, war wasn't totally unexpected. In fact, I think everyone knew that was coming. And in some ways, that was a continuation of the First World War.
Were you issued with a gas mask?
I was.
What was it like?
Quite easily to fit. It did demist a bit, but I never had to use it in any serious situation. I had a young niece who was a baby, my sister's baby, and we used to put her in an incubator type of gas mask and pump from the outside the air.
What kind of a pump?
Just a hand pump, which was attached to the respirator.
Did you have to pump all the time?
Yes, all the time, but gently.
Was the gas mask comfortable to wear?
Yes, quite comfortable.
Did you think there would be a gas attack?
We did, yes.
How did the war affect you at first?
Well, as a child, I was always at Sunday school. I was always told of the horrors of war. The mud and blood in the trenches in the First World War. So that really, in my own mind, that set me against war. But when it came, I was determined to do my bit, as they said.
Who had told you about the First World War?
Sunday school teachers.
Were you in any bombing in the early part of the war?
Yes, I lived on a road called Churchill Road after moving out of the Row District. And we were bombed each end of the terrace. In fact, on one morning, I was alone with my mother. And a German plane came over. And before we could get into the Anderson shelter, most of the ceiling in the hall fell on top of us.
Were there any injuries?
I laid on top of my mother, but I wasn't injured.
You mean you were trying to protect her?
Yeah.
How frightening was that?
Well, I was about 14 then, and I wasn't too frightened, but my mother was.
How much damage was done to the house?
Only superficial, such as windows broken and ceilings cracked and plaster falling. But I was still perfectly all right to occupy it.
Any other memories of the air attacks?
Yes. I started after first of all, in the building trade, I went to build aerodromes in East Anglia, or helped to. And then I started an apprenticeship at Lakin's Brewery on the maintenance department, and part of my job was to repair the roofs after bomb damage. And sometimes when you was on a high roof, the German planes would come over and you didn't have the chance to get down before they started dropping bombs. But
where was that?
That was usually in the centre of Yarmouth, near St Nicholas Church.
But you were going to say something else?
Well, I was going to say that most of the work I'd done as a repairing roofs was very dangerous in itself, because with so short labour, mostly all the ladder work you had to do yourself on very high roofs. Because all the younger men or the men of military age were already in the services.
Did you have the necessary materials to do the repairs?
Yes, that was only usually replacing broken slates and tiles and that sort of thing.
How did public morale stand up to the bombing in Great Yarmouth?
The older population were getting very worried, but most of the men of my age weren't too worried, the younger people.
Did you think that the Germans would invade?
Yes. Because by that time they'd already invaded the France, Holland, Belgium, the Low Countries, and I couldn't see them stopping there. I was almost sure they would in turn come to us.
What did you think would happen if they did?
Well, I believed the propaganda, what we was told at the time. I thought they would do terrible things to us.
Such as?
Well, rape and deportation and that sort of thing.
Did you think that the army would be able to resist them if they got across?
I had my doubts.
Were you listening to wireless at the time?
I was listening to the wireless, but also there was a lot of posters around, propaganda posters. And I'm afraid I believed them, what they said.
What were these propaganda posters?
Well, they said that the Nazi regime was one of grab, and they would eventually come here.
What would you prefer to listen to on the wireless?
Well, at that time, I'd probably listen to Radio Luxembourg.
For music?
Music and that sort of thing, yes. But there was one particular traitor who used to broadcast to England, you probably know about, it was William Joyce, Lord Haw-Haw. We used to listen to his broadcasts.
What did you think about him?
I thought he was an out-and-out traitor, but my father had the opinion that he was trying to warn us.
In what sense?
Well, from time to time, before he raided Yarmouth, he would say, Yarmouth, we haven't forgotten you. And some of the older people took that as a message he was trying to warn us. Although I didn't go along with that myself.
That you mean he was trying to be of benefit?
It could be construed that way, yes.
Did you ever listen to Churchill broadcasting?
I never missed a broadcast. I listened to him and I think he'd done more to pull the country together than anyone. I would never miss his broadcast. I think they was inspiring.
What happened to you next?
I joined a local defence volunteers. And because Yarmouth was so close to the likely invasion places, I was issued with a 303 Lee Enfield rifle, which I was allowed to take home with me, and which I put under the bed. And in the event of an invasion, we were supposed to report to HQ and collect 20 rounds of 303 ammunition. And we were already allotted our defence post where we was to go. And I shared a slit trench with an old ex-Army First World War veteran, a Sergeant King. And there was two of us in this trench. And there was, I should think, in the whole of Yarmouth, there was no more than probably one company of men in the local defence volunteers to defend the town.
Where was LDV HQ?
It was at a place called the Priory School.
Where's that?
That's in the centre of the town, near a building what was called the Temple, which is no longer there.
Did you get much training with LDV?
We'd done drill And we used to march, and we used to go on the firing range. And I was not really, at the age of 14 and being a bit scruffy and only being an errand boy, I wasn't held in very high esteem by the rest of the platoon because they were nearly all professional people. But we went on the firing range at St. Olaves with a load of ammunition, and I got a very good score, and after that I was accepted.
Any other memories of being with LDV?
Well, they were generally a friendly bunch, and they were all patriotic and doing the best. We were led by mostly businessmen who were the officers. And I think we would have been some assistance to the army if the invasion had to come.
What happened to you next?
Well, I was called up for military service proper on July 1st, 1943.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I'd already had my medical examination, passed A1, and I knew I'd be getting my calling up papers any time. So it was just a matter of waiting for the papers to come and to go.
Where did you go to?
Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk.
What happened there?
I was assessed to what regiment I'd go in, and they decided that it would be the infantry. And I was put in the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry in the first place.
Did you do basic training at Bury?
I'd done basic training, drill, marching, arms drill and firing range.
How did the people in charge of the basic training treat you?
They were strict but fair.
Were you able to cope with it?
Yes. Yes, I could cope with discipline.
Whereabouts in Bury was this?
It's a place called Gibraltar Barracks. Although we were not in Gibraltar Barracks properly, we were in huts close by.
How did you feel about going into the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry?
I didn't mind. That was as good as any infantry regiment. You didn't have any choice what you were going in. You just were put in where you were needed.
Were you happy to be in light infantry rather than heavy infantry?
Yes, I was fit and young. I was quite capable of the drill and the exercises.
And after the basic training?
After the basic training, we moved to Colchester Barracks. I was still in the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry, and we were stationed at a very, very old cavalry barracks. And our barrack room was above the stables. There were no horses there then. But the barracks itself predated the First World War.
What was it like at Colchester as compared with Bury?
I think I enjoyed it more, I liked it more. We used to go in the town, the people made us quite welcome. I used to go to dances on Saturday evening. And I didn't mind it at all.
Which battalion of Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry were you in?
That'd be the 5th Battalion.
Then?
And then we moved on from Colchester and we posted to Dover. And I think the barracks was built by someone almost sure that was built by Horbelicia when he was War Minister. It was quite a modern, up-to-date barracks. And there we really got down to really serious training. And we were issued with bicycles.
And why was that?
Well, we used to patrol the coastline in case of invasion.
Was there any shelling from across the channel?
Yes, I was moved to Folkestone, which was quite close to Dover, and I was billeted in private bungalows, which had been emptied. People had left them. And the whole battalion was in private bungalows, and where we slept, and we went to the mess room for our meals. And the shelling used to come over from the German side, and that was almost immediately answered by shelling from our side at once. I would say within a minute. And you could actually hear the shrapnel whistling through the air.
Where did the German shells land?
They landed mostly on the cliffs at Folkestone.
Did it cause casualties or damage?
I think it must have done, but I wasn't aware of any in amongst the soldiers I was with.
Do you know whereabouts in Folkestone you were billeted?
I know it was a good walk from Lees Cliff, because I used to go to Lees Cliff, which was the centre in Folkestone, and I used to walk home from there, and it used to be about 5 miles. I used to go out for the evening in Folkestone and walk back to where I was billeted.
Were there plenty of civilians around in Folkestone and Dover?
Yes, there was, surprisingly, yeah. The front itself was all covered with dannet wire and barbed wire, and no way could you get on the beach or anything. But it all looked secure. And Folkestone was a nice place to be stationed, apart from the shelling.
Why was that?
Well, the countryside was lovely.
What's the difference between barbed wire and dannet wire?
Dannet wire is made up in rolls, heaped one roll on top of two, making a section of three rolls. It's almost impossible to get through, but we were trying to get through it.
Where is barbed wire?
Barbed wire was straight with the sort of obstacles on the top of it to stop you climbing over.
Any incidents that happened to you in Folkestone and Dover?
No, I'd done my training and I realised at that time that the second front must be very close. But apart from that, nothing happened.
You said you were doing some really serious training. What did you mean by that?
Well, we went on exercises using live ammunition, and we had to go through barbed wire and crawl underneath, while Sergeant Mayner on a fixed machine gun would be firing live ammunition over our heads.
Were you in a platoon and company by now?
I was in a platoon and company, but I don't remember which one.
What happened next to you?
Well, we trained and trained, and then eventually we were sent over to Normandy. And it was all done in great secrecy. We were sent home on embarkation leave. And when we came back, that was it. No one was allowed to go home for any reason. In fact, a man who I knew in the army said his mother was dying, but they still wouldn't allow him to go home. It was that strict, the secrecy.
Were you still at Folkestone, or had you moved elsewhere?
We'd moved further down to, I think, Ashford.
In Kent?
Yeah.
What other preparations for Normandy do you remember?
I don't remember ever realising until we actually got to the port of embarkation. I guessed we were going, but didn't have any clear idea. And simply took us one day and that was it. We just loaded up on the boats and went over.
And were you still in the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry?
I was at that time.
What was your channel crossing like?
Reasonably good. And when I got over there, landed on the beach was already secure. And I went, to the approaches of Bayeux, but not as far as that. And the first casualties had been just buried. And the German soldiers who were taken prisoner went back on the same boat that brought us over.
Did you land on D-Day?
No, I didn't land on D-Day. I was some days after that. But not long after. The Germans were, by that time, realising we were making a landing and they were starting to counterattack.
Can you describe the first time you were in action, please?
Yes, the first time I was in action, I don't know exactly where it was in Normandy, but we went into action and I was very surprised when I saw on the German soldiers' belts the words, "God is with us," which was stamped on the buckle of their belts. But obviously they were just as religious as what we were.
Know any German?
No. It was easy to translate.
Were you frightened the first time in action?
I was frightened, but I don't think I knew it.
Was it just a standard infantry attack?
Yes, it was attacking and trying to take a position known as Hill 112, which is a vital point which the Germans wanted to stop us taking and what Montgomery wanted us to take.
Was this still with Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light
Infantry? No, I'd been transferred into the 10th Howling Light Infantry by that time to make up for the casualties they'd already lost.
Do you know when you were transferred to the 10th HLI?
In June of 44, but I don't know the exact date.
How did you find the HLI after the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry?
There was a lot of Englishmen in the HLI. There was also a scattering of Welsh people. there was actually one or two Jewish people